Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show with advice and insight into the technologies and practices currently being used to build web applications in the real world. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallen, and John Papa talk to industry experts about their experiences writing, deploying, and maintaining web applications in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is episode 55. This week is TypeScript with Azure Functions, and our special guest is Marie Hager. Ward,
yeah.
You're my co-host again. It seems like it's just me and you.
Well, they'll just have to get used to it.
Yeah, where's Dan, man? Where's he been?
He is a busy guy. I would not trade for his life.
He's a big traveling, training, and consulting guy, so Dan's all over the world. So we'll have Dan in spirit here today, but I know you and I are traveling to Europe tomorrow for Angular Connect. You excited about it?
I am, actually, John. It's a great conference, a lot of fun. Really gets people talking in the halls and things like that, which is something you and I love to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. This year, they're having a workshop that some folks are running on creating Visual Studio Code extensions, and they asked if I wanted to help with it, and part of me was excited because I've done a lot of extension work, but then part of me is also like dreading it because it's much more involved than you could ever possibly imagine. So it's like, ooh, well, this will be fun to see how that works out.
And be careful what you wish for, because as you know, with your quite popular Peacock extension, you're just inundated with requests and stuff like that.
Yes, my favorite recent reviews on Peacock are, because usually they're like, I love it, thank you. And then I get the occasional, like I got recently, it changed the colors on my VS Code.
Yes, it did.
Like, yes.
Thank you. That's what it's supposed to.
I love open source. It's free and it changed colors. Yes, that's what it's supposed to do. Anyway, thanks for the plug of my extension. Marie, it's great to have you on the show. You've been an amazing helper for me in my journey through creating serverless and Azure Functions. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let everybody in the audience know who Marie is. Marie is primarily a JavaScript developer on the Azure Functions team, Azure's serverless compute offering. And like many Seattleites, she enjoys coffee, frisbee, hiking, and not using umbrellas. And I can attest to that because I lived in Seattle and I think there's no umbrella sales. It's like people just like being wet.
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous when I first moved there. But like putting out an umbrella, it takes so much time. You're always wet anyways. It's all right.
You know, I coincidentally, I was just reading a biography of Einstein. And one of the great anecdotes, and there are plenty of them, is that it started raining and he took his hat off his head and put it in his coat. And they asked him, what are you doing? And he says, well, my head has been gotten wet forever, and I know it's still okay, but my hat, I'm afraid the rain might ruin it.
That's fascinating. Oh, my. So I first wanted up to – I wanted to do a quick call out to – we had Colby on recently, Colby Trestness, who is a coworker of yours on the Functions team. And he's quite awesome and has been super helpful with the community on creating serverless in general, and also obviously for Azure Functions.
Totally agreed.
But we were talking about TypeScript with Azure Functions, and it's interesting. I'll be very honest. I know TypeScript well. I've written courses on it. I've used Angular with TypeScript for years. But when I write Node, and I kind of liken Azure Functions to Node, I'm a big JavaScript person. Like, I just like JavaScript.
Really?
And when I get into...
Hang your head in shame, John.
You know, I start getting into TypeScript with it. I'm like, you know, I got to figure out, is there an advantage? Is there not? And I'm coming around to it. I've written more and more expressive TypeScript lately, and I'm actually really liking it. But when Azure Functions came out with TypeScript, I found it intriguing and like why you all would go in that direction. Are people leaning more towards TypeScript or JavaScript with the functions? I mean, can you give us a sense of like why you all went there?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the biggest things is just the trend in the community has been so overwhelmingly positive or like, you know, going towards TypeScript. Our repo itself is written in TypeScript too, just because... it makes things a lot easier with, you know, obviously IntelliSense is there. It's much easier to lint your code. And you just, catch a lot of errors before they really become errors. So I think TypeScript is still 100% relevant to, you know, Node apps and Azure Functions too.
So let me challenge you on that. You're saying TypeScript helps me find errors earlier than JavaScript. How does it do that?
Yeah, just in terms of like the typing and making sure that what you input is, or what you think you've input is actually what you are inputting. And TypeScript is so good at calling out when it's like, hey, I don't think this is what you actually expect it to be. So that's what I've always found super helpful.
Yeah, I found a few things to be very helpful with it as I was going through. Like, it was really helpful for me, for example, to have the request and response objects typed for Express. Like, I know their APIs pretty well because I work with a lot of Express, but there were actually APIs in there I had never seen because, okay, I'll admit it, I don't really go to the docs for Express. And I was like, wow, I didn't realize I could do that on this function here. Let me give that a shot. So
yeah, totally agreed. And with Azure Functions too, like, there's so many times where I've had to scroll over to the docs to figure out, you know, I just want to know like what the URL was or, you know, what a request parameter was. And it's so hard to remember, you know, because you've got Express and then you've got Azure Functions and then you've got your normal, you know, Node HTTP. So it's like with all those objects that still do HTTP, how do you get to just a request parameter, right? And like, it's different for each of these ecosystems. So TypeScript helps so much with finding that right away.
I can't even remember my own stuff, you know, from one day to the next. And it's like, what did that thing do? You know, what are the right arguments? And what is the type of the object that's going to go into or come out of it, particularly if it's a complex structure of some sort, which it usually is in my
eyes. Yeah.
I'll tell you that one of the first rules I turn off, though, with ESLint, which we should get into in a minute, because I do lint my TypeScript too, is I turn off the no unused vars. And it's not, I don't want to. Like, I really like getting rid of unused vars, but with Express specifically, I always like to have request and response in every single route.
Interesting.
Even if I'm not using request and response, I like them both being there. I don't know why. It's just maybe I need medical help. I don't know. But so I have to turn that off to make it go away or do like a file-based ESLint on it. And don't know. But
see, it's so beautiful, though, that you can still customize it. So it's not like a tool that's there to bring down the hard hammer, right? It's like it's there if you want it. If you want to turn off the, you know, take off your seatbelt, that's okay. It's not against the law. So.
Can't you do that at the site of the call, John, or is that just too much of a pain?
You can. That's what I was saying. Is I could do it at the file level, like in the route file, you know, turn off that one rule. But honestly, I'd love to like just say, maybe there's a way to do it. I'd love to be able to say, turn off this rule except for request and response.
Okay. Well, we'll take that under advisement. But you know, I mean,
thank you very much, Politician Ward.
There you go. Thank you for your feedback, I think is the official Microsoft phrase. You know, there's that little lamp there. It's not like it's hard to do the one line exception. I don't know. Well, whatever you say, John. But in general, we like these linters, I think it's safe to say.
We do. And the elephant in the room here is like people might be wondering, why are you using ESLint for TypeScript? And there was an announcement earlier this year in 2019 on the TypeScript roadmap, which I'm not sure if do you help write that one, Marie, or is it somebody else in your team?
No, separate team, yeah.
Okay. So the folks there, they put on their roadmap for TypeScript of having, these are my words, not theirs, but, and I'll put the article in here too, basically getting rid of TSLint or starting to deprecate it in favor of using ESLint inside of TypeScript and just having ESLint, which is vastly popular in JavaScript already, cover both JavaScript and TypeScript. And I started making that shift myself, and it's actually been very, very good. I'll put some articles in here on using ESLint and Prettier, one here by Robert Cooper on Dev2, and then also the TypeScript roadmap in case anybody's interested in going down that road. Hey, Ward, guess what time it is?
I don't know, John. What time is it?
It's time to talk about data in web apps and AG Grid.
AG Grid. I've got a story for you.
Do tell.
Well, it's about my own consulting company, IdeaBlade, where we build web apps for enterprise clients, and they tend to have lots of data grids. and lots of complex data grids. Last year, one of our clients said, we want you to use AG Grid. So we said, okay, let's give it a try. And it turned out great.
So you must have had a lot of requirements and features. How did you go through that process?
Well, John, these enterprise apps are very data intensive and they want lots of features. We needed all the bells and whistles, column filtering, column sorting, moving the columns around, custom components inside the data cells, and even grids within grids. And it just worked fine with AG Grid. Just great, actually.
Okay, but the ultimate terminator is going to be performance. How fast was this with a lot of rows?
We, you know, had initial worries about that too, but it scrolls so smoothly through that data when you're getting it remotely. It was fantastic.
Would you do this again? Would you recommend it?
Well, we certainly would. In fact, my business partner, who is the lead on the team that built this project, he tells me now, despite the fact that he had been using another grid all this time, if somebody asks me today to recommend a data grid, I recommend AG Grid. And coming from him, a real curmudgeon, that is high praise indeed.
So everybody out there, do check out AG Grid at their website, ag-grid.com. So TypeScript, we're going down the road with functions in TypeScript. What kind of things, what kind of usage are you seeing from people when they're creating functions in TypeScript or JavaScript?
Yeah, so we've seen a lot of adoption, and I think we have a Azure Functions VS Code extension, which is where we're seeing it a lot too. The integration there is really smooth. Especially because, so one thing I should mention is that when you run your TypeScript on Azure Functions, it's not actually running the TypeScript itself, or it's not doing, you know, like I upload my straight TS code and then it, you know, transpiles on the fly. We have tooling support that it automatically transpiles before deployment. And that's just to save on cold start time. And cold start is a hot topic with serverless. so that's one little bit of difference, is that you're not actually running TypeScript itself. It's there for your development. And then on run and publish, it all turns into JavaScript.
So is that fast? Like, I mean, in a Hello World app or a small app, I imagine it's super fast, but what does that add to the time for a site in general by having to compile the TypeScript first?
Yeah, so I'm forgetting what the exact numbers are, but it's on every single execution. The problem with serverless is that it's not just you deploy it and then the very first time it would have to transpile. If you were to just deploy TypeScript code, it would be every single time that a new server spins up. And in serverless, that happens all the time.
Yeah, especially if you're doing the consumption model, which is effectively the, oh, you know, I always imagine there's somebody in the back room going, somebody hit my API. I got to go stick a bit of code into a blade and, you know, crank things up. And obviously, it's all automated. But there is a little bit of cost, and that's what the cold start is, right, for starting up these consumption-based serverless features.
Exactly. Right.
And you don't want to do anything that you could get out of the way ahead of time.
Yep.
And if you were asking, like, how long does it take to transpile and everything? Well, anecdotally, it ain't. You know, I mean, in order to get that done ahead of time. Anecdotally, yeah. I was just on your little example, which I hope we can talk about. And I didn't even notice that it was, until I looked in the dist file, that it was, you know, it took care of that, and all you were actually deploying was JavaScript files.
Yeah. And so our goal with that was to really make it seamless, so that I know I'm talking about it now, but the goal is that you wouldn't have to worry about that either.
And I didn't.
Perfect.
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm bringing these up because they were in my head when I first started with it. But I've been working on a couple of TypeScript functions projects lately, and I'll put the links in here to both Maria's and my projects and GitHub, but I don't even think I've noticed a compilation time. It's been like that fast to get things moving. So, and I'm looking at your dependencies. You've got a dev dependency on Azure Functions, and you've got a dev dependency on TypeScript, which both make sense.
Yep.
But that's really it. There's not a lot of other weight to using functions, right?
Yeah. And the Azure Functions dev dependency is actually just a type definition file too. And so One of the biggest benefits that we get from that is just baked in documentation. So I think a lot of times that context object can seem a little bit mysterious. One good example is the context.done callback. Well, with Node 8 and Node 10, we don't actually need callbacks because we have async. And that's tripped up people a lot before. But now if you look at just the documentation on what the shape of an Azure function is, or even just on context.done, you can right away say that, like, okay, I'm not using callbacks, so this isn't relevant to me.
Yeah, that's actually, it's funny. You and I have talked about that exact issue where, you know, in JavaScript, we used to do the callback or the context.done.
Yeah.
And switching to TypeScript, I kept on running into that common error that I think your name is all over the place on GitHub on of something like, hey, you're calling context.done and you've done it more than once. And then you go look at your code and you haven't called it any times.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here?
Right.
What exactly was happening in that situation?
Yeah, for those, usually it's context.done is called in the background whenever you write an async function. I'm trying to remember exactly. A lot of times it is that it's called twice because it's both an async function and somewhere in the code context.done is called. Other times it kind of indicates that there's an issue with promises not being properly awaited on each other. So in any case, it's usually something is off that in how you're waiting on async functions.
Yeah, and I ran into it last night because I was using the Cosmos DB API, which just happened to be an API I was using inside of functions, which, as an aside, people might be interested in. You can use any NPM library inside of Azure Functions. So that was the database I was talking to. So I was using their SDK. And I accidentally returned an object. I didn't know why, but I had used destructuring to pull an object out of a response from the database that I thought was the item I was looking for.
Yep.
And the reason I thought it was the item I was looking for is because the name of the object was item. So I pulled it out, and it turns out that item itself, I believe, was actually a promise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I thought I was getting like a customer, you know?
Yeah.
And I was actually getting a promise, and I kept on getting the error in the functions of, you know, you have called context.done too many times, don't do that. And I'm like, what are you smoking? I'm like, so that part was a little weird to me. And it turned out the reason I found that the solution was exactly because it is TypeScript. Mm-hmm. I hovered over the different variables in the code I had written, and I saw that it was returning a promise because of the typing files. And so exactly what you're saying, the reason to use TypeScript is what saved me in that case.
Yeah. You know exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, because that's it's actually really nice. So I'm looking through your example right now, and I encourage people online to go check it out. And you've got pandas and puppies in this example, which just makes it even better.
Yeah, I do love animals a lot.
So does Ward. So that you get along there.
It's the main reason why I'm on Twitter.
And looking at your gosh, emergency kittens for the win.
Yeah.
looking at your code here, I see like the Azure function itself is an AZ function, and then what you're doing is you're getting like a panda image, and you're getting a panda fact. And one of those is asynchronous and one of those is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just wondering that's nice. About that. One of them returns any.
Yeah.
Is that bad sorry. Word? Is returning any bad?
That is bad. That is bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, come on. We all do it. No shaming for any.
Look, hey, this is actually an interesting type. You know, I feel...
What do you mean actually interesting?
No, well, you know, because we're laughing about any, and sometimes it's a mistake and sometimes it's a not. All right? So when you really can come up with a type, then I think we all agree it's a mistake. You should give them the type. But there are places where you can go down a rabbit hole in TypeScript fighting to try and come up with a perfect wacky type that fits everything.
And
you could spend hours on that. And I don't think that's time well spent. So when you have a nice clean structure and it's not too hard to come up with a typing, you don't have to be a type genius to do it, then you should. So this case, it looks like you could have done better than Annie.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm, you know, this is funny. I'm going to have to clean up this repo before the podcast comes out. So then
this is called GitHub shaming word. I'm feeling really bad right now.
We're going for it.
Come
on.
Right.
But so let me give some people some context though on this. This before Mari came on, I said, oh, well, I'm going to go take a look at what she's done, what we're talking about here. So I fired up her repo and there's a README and bang, 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 3 minutes later, it's up and running. It's compiled, it's up and running. I'm looking at the code. I can see how it all hangs together. I found it a delightful learning tool. So there's kudos to you.
Thank you.
And next week on the podcast, we will GitHub shame all of WordBell's public GitHub repositories.
Oh, wow. You wish.
Oh, my gosh.
I actually love to, going back a little bit to Annie, that you brought that up, because I know, especially if you're moving from like a JavaScript repository and trying to, you know, bring it over to TypeScript and enforce the types, I ran into an issue once where a method on an object could either actually just be a property, like a string property, or it could be a function that you could also call. And like, I struggled for such a long time trying to get everything hooked up working. And so that for a personal project was where I just kind of said, all right, I'm just going to call it any.
Well, I'm curious what struggles you've had, because I recently took a project where I had a functions project, which was entirely JavaScript. And I wanted to switch it to TypeScript because we've been doing TypeScript for a while. So this is an older project I'd written a while ago. And the struggles I had were not with the types, interestingly. Most of my struggles were with two areas, which someone will probably shame me for, which is the imports. So in JavaScript, we do a lot of require, and then we use import with TypeScript. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you can just require with TypeScript, but, you know, I'm trying to use the TypeScript way. And the first thing I struggled with that was not the syntax, but figuring out, because like you can export a default, you can export an object, you can then import it as star, you can import just the individual parts and destructure them. And it got hard for me. Like I started getting stuck in the mud for a minute of not that, you know, how to do it, but I wanted to do it what I felt like was the right way. Mm-hmm. And I find that I spend a lot of cycles when I convert require statements into imports because of this. And it would be so much easier if, you know, in JavaScript right now, I could do full imports everywhere.
Yeah.
But I couldn't. So I'm curious if, you know, something you've seen before, or you have any tips, or is this just a John Papa problem?
I don't think so. So I got lucky in that our code base started out in TypeScript. So I haven't done as much conversion. I wish I had a better tip for you. That's not a good tip.
But that actually makes me think, is it written in TypeScript? Azure Functions itself?
Yeah, the Azure Functions, the node portion is all written in TypeScript.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, just because early on we kind of, you know, we had an advantage because it is a Microsoft product, but it also was just a way smoother development experience.
You know, Ward, you and I were talking about this a while ago, but a couple of years back, it was like odd to see anything written in TypeScript. And I think the inflection point, at least from what I remember, was if you look at the Google Trends, is when an Angular team adopted it. It seemed like, yeah, you know, other libraries and tools and other people outside of Microsoft even were starting to really use TypeScript. Like I see a lot of TypeScript in React these days too.
I think everybody's kind of caught on to it. And, you know, this podcast is part of that, you know, encouragement to join the wave. But I think that now people realize that as a library author, it's really helpful to the author as well as the consumer to do it this way. So I just won't go back. That's why I'm shocked, John, when you said that you've been writing node apps in straight up JavaScript.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's just, you know, I've been doing JavaScript for over a decade, you know, almost 2 decades. And I just kind of flow with that and it just works. Whereas, do you write a lot of Node on the server, Ward, or are you mostly ASP.NET?
I don't write. I don't write server code anymore.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now it's embarrassed me, right? Full stack developer. I lived on the server forever, and now, you know, I don't write much over there because I farm that stuff out. I find that side of things is so uninteresting.
For you, yeah.
For me. Sorry.
I love it. I love both sides personally.
You love writing server side? I find that it's sort of like, I'm a UI guy. Like, let me talk to the user.
This is a really good point, and I know Ward and I are talking here, but I'm curious on Mario pulling you into this because Ward and I have talked quite a bit, and I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, Ward, of what is the real value in functions? Like, I often talk about I get excited about Azure Functions, and Ward is a little bit less excited about it. So these open up good discussions, but like, Help me out here.
For sure. Yeah, I think like, so it's kind of funny too, because something I've been thinking about is like how our team has a lot of different developers with different languages as their main focus. And when each of them, our developers kind of talk about like, you know, what is the value of Azure Functions? The answer kind of depends also on what your language background is. And so for JavaScript developers, like everything is web-based. And so like a lot of times the answers will be around, well, you can use it as your backend APIs and it's way easier to get started and deploy. But you'll talk to someone like a PowerShell developer and they'll be like, oh, you can delete all your old resources or provision new things. Or, you know, maybe someone from like .NET would be like, oh, like, I send all these calendar invites or something like that. So I think, yeah, it's a complex answer, but I think like what I love about functions and also just kind of like more backend servery stuff is that you're kind of like, you're solving a workflow. You're solving not just the experience, but you're kind of, you know, you're creating a method on a problem. So I don't know if that was a little bit rambly, but.
So Ward, did she convince you?
Well, no, she got me. You got me thinking because there are actually clearly there are problem domains that where you want to write code that executes on the server and it's doing you know it's doing a lot of manipulation that should happen back there and isn't really about directly interacting with the user.
Yeah. And I think
those are many. Those are many, many really interesting problems. I just have had my brain shifted over to user experience type problems, and so I withdraw my critique.
Yeah, I think too. If you just think about like you know little scripts that you write for yourself, or little scripts that you wish could always be running for yourself, like Azure Functions and serverless in general, just makes that so easy. And so, yeah, that's what I love. It's like, it's a very like open box.
Do you want to spend more time building great applications and less time configuring your tools? Do you want a deeper understanding of the Angular platform? The experts from Narwhal can help. Narwhal is a consulting firm made up of former Angular team members and wonderful web experts who help developers build apps better and faster through their consulting, training, and open source tools. You may be familiar with NX and Angular Console, two of Narwhal's free tools that already help top companies worldwide to build ambitious Angular apps with modern tools and practices. If you want to build software like Google does, consider working with Narwhal. Learn more at nrwl.io/realtalk. That's narwhal.io, realtalk.
Mario, we talked about setting up Azure Functions in TypeScript, and we talked a little about like the NPM dependencies and also how you compile, but there's other tools out there for running TypeScript with Node.
Yeah.
What else did you consider? What are the options and why didn't you choose them?
For sure. One of the biggest things that we considered was running on TS Node. And TS Node is another open source project that lets you just run TypeScript without an explicit, you know, compilation step to create JavaScript. Which is super, super helpful for a lot of times. And if you're just getting started with TypeScript, it can sometimes be confusing to, you know, have to TSC compile all of your files? And what if they don't end up in the right folder or in the right way? And so TS Node kind of solves that problem in that instead of doing, you know, something like node index.js, you would call TS Node index.js, and it transpiles it on the fly and then just runs your TypeScript code. So going back to, we considered that for Azure Functions, so we wouldn't even need that transformation between TypeScript and JavaScript. But one of our biggest concerns there was that every single time you run your code through TS Node, it requires that extra transformation step. And we talked about this earlier too, but yeah, that's just a lot more time. So for Azure Functions in particular, that's why we did all these investments around tooling to just make it a seamless experience. But if you're just trying TypeScript on your own with Node development, highly, highly recommend TS Node. Just because even I think our test projects actually in our Azure Functions project itself, they run on TS Node so that we don't have to do any of that transpilation.
You know, there's a really good repository. I mentioned some that we'll put links into the show notes here. I believe, I know Bowden Kelly, who is on the TypeScript team or the Node team.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's great. And he helped with this. I think Daniel Rosenwasser and some others. I'll put the link in here. But what I like is looking at the package.json, which is a pretty common thing I do when I go look at repositories for examples. I see, I'm looking here, lines 56 through 85 of this package. So 30 lines are effectively types that have been included as dependencies and for various things. Tell me if I'm wrong here. When you include a type as a dev dependency, that means that that library probably doesn't have a typings file built into it, right?
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, TypeScript team kind of has recommendations of either if you can, shipping your types file with the actual NPM package. But there's also definitely typed, which is kind of like...
Yeah, that was like the first really good typing system out there.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what types is doing.
Yeah, that's where you'll go get jQuery. You know, jQuery obviously wasn't written in TypeScript. And if you happen to be using it, aside from shame on you, that's where you'll find the types.
Nothing wrong with jQuery. There's no shame in here.
This is the shame podcast.
Yeah, and I'm looking, and you're right. Like, a lot of the stuff I see in this list, honestly, are libraries that have been around for a while, which to me, if I'm the owner of one of these libraries like jQuery or Lodash or Mongoose even – and I'm looking at them, I probably don't have the cycles to go back and add typings files to a library that was free, right? So that's where definitely typed is really helpful, adding in types. Because you don't do it for like Angular, you don't do that because it just comes with them now. You know, they kind of wrap it into the whole process. But I noticed in there, that's where I saw in this library, there actually is TS Node. And this is just a Node project, not an Azure Functions project.
Yep.
But they also have ESLint in here. And I know we mentioned it earlier, using ESLint with TypeScript. While you can read the articles that I put in the show notes, I recommend people look at this repository. It's called the TypeScript Node Starter. And there's it's really easy to do. You just grab the ESLint library. There's also some other tips in here on how you can use TypeScript-ESLint, the plugin and the parser. And then you just pull that into your project, create yourself an RC file with whatever rules you want. And there's a sample one right in here. And frankly, I just copied and pasted it. And then everything was just using ESLint for TypeScript, which I found to be super easy and helpful. So thank you, Bowden Kelly. I guess he's going to be my shout out for today. So Mari, what else are you working on? I mean, Functions does not sleep, it seems. It seems to be the hottest thing at Microsoft, in my opinion. So, and even beyond Microsoft, like Lambda and Google Cloud Functions, it just seems like serverless is like, you know, the hottest thing out there, in my opinion. What are you guys working on?
We're working on a lot. One of the exciting things that's coming up is durable entities. And you definitely recommend having somebody else on the show for durable functions, because I think once you get to know serverless, durable functions just kind of breaks any boundaries and limitations that you have with that. So that's my kind of teaser.
Oh, come on, give me a hint. What's durable about them? Like, I can hit them with a hammer. They last for more than a minute. What's durable?
Durable functions, it lets functions communicate between each other. And so you can kind of orchestrate the flow of different functions. So like one classic example is like you can do kind of a fan out, fan in pattern with individual functions. So you could...
So functions calling other functions, for example?
Yeah, and then waiting for the result, which is kind of nuts. Yeah, and then durable entities, you can kind of think about it like... people always say it's like really similar to the actor model. And for me, that didn't totally make sense. So you can think about it also like...
I love it when people say, that stuff. You know, actors like one of the hardest things, concepts to wrap your head around. And so, you know... it's just like monads. So, oh, that really helps.
Exactly. So something to look forward to is that durable entities, if you think about a table, each row is like a durable entity, except instead of the row just holding data, think of it as something that like has methods on it. And so each instance of a durable entity, you can keep modifying or using the values that are stored inside of that row, except now it just has methods for that specific row to do specific things. So let me give you a concrete example. That's like for IoT things, like say you have like a step counter or something like that. You would have your one durable entities instance that holds on to the number of steps that you have. And then every time your API pings for an extra step was done, the state keeps increasing.
Wow, because normally the rule is don't keep state in one of these functions. But...
Yeah. But the whole kind of durable suite of things kind of breaks that apart.
Awesome. Interesting. Hey, Maria, thanks for coming on today and talking with us about TypeScript and for helping us tease and shame Ward about GitHub. do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about Azure Functions or TypeScript or just Ultimate Frisbee in general?
I know John Papa said that JavaScript and Node are great, but TypeScript is just better. I'm so sorry.
Yeah!
Definitely, I can definitely agree. It's just taking me a while to completely shift. Like as far as Functions goes, I'm completely there. Awesome. As far as Node Express goes, I'm getting there.
Awesome. I think it's well worth it.
I agree with you. And I'll make my final thought for everybody of definitely lean on like repos out there. And maybe this is something you're already doing, but if not, a lot of times when I learn, like docs are great. I love docs. And friends are great. Like Maria has been very helpful for me when I've had questions. But the best resources are GitHub repositories, in my opinion. When you go find someone else's code who's doing something similar to what you want and learning from those, there's just so much great goodness that you can learn by looking at other people's stuff. So definitely check it out. And the repos that we put in there for both Maria and the TypeScript Node Starter are great starting points. Ward, what's your final thought for our listeners?
Well, my pick is from a friend of ours, Ben Nadell or Nadell or whatever. I never get his name right. Sorry, Ben. And he wrote an article. When he writes articles, they walk you through stuff so that you really learn. On experimenting with TS Node and using TypeScript in Node.js on the server. So that'll be in our show notes, and Ben's great.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for coming back on here, Maria, and thanks, Ward, for being a great host and being on the show. We've 55 episodes, man. It's been a while, you know? And thank you all for listening to Real Talk JavaScript yet another week, and we'll see you every Tuesday morning.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter at realtalkjs.